Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And of course, you can find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Goodpods, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As for our social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro. Also on Blue Sky Social as Let's Talk Micro as well. On X as Let's Talk Micro 1. On LinkedIn as Luis Plaza. And I have an email address, which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any suggestions, any feedback. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And as you know, the Let's Talk Micro podcast does not have any sponsors, so if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so via Venmo or via Buy Me a Coffee, KOFI, both links available on the show notes. And if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book, available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, as they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. I definitely invite you to check out these great resources from Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. If you haven't checked out the previous episode, please go ahead and do so. It was a great episode about sulopenem. And if you're a medical lab scientist, maybe you might have not heard of it, or maybe you saw it on social media, but definitely if you are an ID pharmacist, an ID doc, and maybe like a PhD in microbiology, like a director type, I'm sure you have definitely heard of it. And when we think of sulopenem, you know, we think of carbapenems. And in the episode, I had Dr. Sam Aitken, which is he's a ID pharmacist from the University of Michigan. He came to the podcast to talk about sulopenem. And in the episode, one of the things that he talks about is making the distinction that it is not really a carbapenem, it's actually just, you know, a penem, or better said, a thiopenem, because in the structure it has a sulfur instead of a carbon. And in the episode, like we normally do in Let's Talk Micro, you know, he breaks it down. So he goes over sulopenem, and you know, what was it approved for? Why is it combined with Prevenacid under the name Orlynvah? And he actually talks about what Prevenacid is. And in the episode, I also ask him about carbapenems and when they are appropriate for treatment. I also ask him about choosing one carbapenem over another. So when do you decide which one you will use for treatment? And one thing about carbapenems is that they are IV, you know, they are not oral drugs. And sulopenem is. And that's one of the things that we see mixed reactions to social media about having an oral penem. So in the episode, I ask him about, you know, this controversy and why do people have reservations about having this type of oral drug. And he goes on to provide great explanations, not only about that, but about everything that I mentioned. So this was definitely such a great episode to record, and I learned so much. So definitely check it out if you haven't already. Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about today's episode. So this was a great episode, and it was about a simulation lab. And one of the challenges that we have in medical lab sciences programs, you know, it's placing students on hospitals for clinical rotations. And also that sometimes, you know, as more labs become centralized, and this is especially true of microbiology, sometimes when the students are doing their rotations, they might not be getting that much exposure to that particular subject matter. So in the episode, I am joined by Emily Mathis, and she's an assistant professor at Northern Michigan University, and she joined the podcast to talk about a simulation lab that they are doing with their MLT, Medical Laboratory Technician program students. And in this simulation lab, they go over, you know, they do a little bit of blood bank, but they do microbiology, you know, they go over biochemicals, they go over, you know, they practice calling critical labs. And this is something that Emily says that it was, you know, it was made to supplement the clinical rotation. So, you know, they go to their site, they learn, they get some exposure, and then with this, you know, they supplement their learning. And I think that this is a wonderful idea, and maybe hopefully this is something that other programs, you know, can start using if they need to, right? So maybe this is something that you might need to implement in your program. Maybe you're having some of these issues that, you know, that we mentioned in this episode. So Emily says, please feel free to reach out if you need to. So all in all, a great episode, very informative, so let's go ahead and listen to it. So as you know, I am a medical lab scientist and I'm a microbiologist, and from time to time I really enjoy chatting with people from the MLS community, like MLS programs, MLT programs. Definitely I love bringing awareness to the profession. As you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard and people don't realize we exist until you already have an advanced degree and you go back in school. So we're definitely working on that. And I think there's definitely some progress, but we still keep working on it. But I was in a conference in Pittsburgh, and I was looking at some posters, and I met someone from an MLT program that she actually was doing a presentation on a simulation lab. And we'll definitely talk more about that. But with me today, I have Emily Mathis. Emily, welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Definitely a pleasure. And so let's start with, you know, for the audience, with a quick introduction about what you do and anything else that you want to share with them.
Sure. Yeah. I sort of echo your sentiments about trying to bring some light to this profession. My name's, again, Emily Mathis. I'm an assistant professor at Northern Michigan University up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I joined the faculty here in 2021. Before that, I was working as a medical laboratory scientist. I worked as a generalist for a few years in hematology, chemistry, and blood bank. And then right before I took this position, I was working in the microbiology lab. Like many folks in the medical lab profession, I am sort of a non-traditional. How I got to this career route, I was actually in graduate school studying fish. So I studied how fish use spawning reefs, and I spent hundreds of hours looking at larval fishes under the microscope and identifying them to species by tiny little structures in their body. And through graduate school, I got the opportunity to teach micro. And then I just really got ignited by trying to figure out how I could make a career of being in the lab. I really liked laboratory work. And after I graduated, I was working as an adjunct teaching micro and biology, and then decided to take a couple semesters to get an MLS degree. And so that's basically how I wound up in the medical profession. And then when I went back to become to apply for this position, all of that adjunct and teaching experience sort of allowed me to enter academia. So that's been a fun new challenge.
Yeah, so definitely. As you know, as you talk about, you know, tell us your story, and it's very typical when we see sometimes, and when I went through MLS program, and I guess in my way, I kind of found out, you know, I went a little bit later in life, but I was trying to find out what I wanted to do, and I heard about an MLT program, and that's when I started my whole career. But definitely very typical that you're going through a program, and you have your 21, 22-year-old first time going to college, you know, for an MLS program. And then you have 30 people in their 30s, you know, even 40s, that they already had a degree, they had a job, and then they heard about this and then they came back. So we can definitely use all the help. And, you know, as always, you know, we deal with shortages. So, but definitely it is a great profession. And so what can you tell us about the program at Northern Michigan University, as far as, you know, typically, you know, in this case, and you're, you know, we're talking about an MLT program. And so let's start with that.
Yeah, sure. So there's a couple of routes that you can go to get into the laboratory profession at Northern. A lot of students choose to get their associate's degree, which is a two-year program. We are accredited by NACLS, not to get too jargony, but that's our accrediting agency. So when students get done with our program, they're eligible to sit a board exam. And then that's provided by the ASCP, and a lot of hospitals require that certification in order to work. So they can do that two-year program to get their medical laboratory technician certification. We do have a four-year degree too, so you can get your bachelor's degree in medical lab science. We have a couple other concentrations as well, micro and histology. And then also some folks choose to do a ladder. So they get their MLT, they do their internship, and then they come back for their four-year degree. And then finally, we also have an online program. So you can, folks who are working as MLTs can actually come to school online at Northern and get their bachelor's degree and then sit their board exam.
Excellent. And then in not only the MLS and definitely, you know, like the microbiology that I recently went through, and we're getting a lot of this online programs, which are definitely very convenient because we have a lot of people that are in the workforce and stepping out of that, you know, you're counting with that income and just being a full-time student and not having that can be challenging. So you can continue working while getting your education, which is great.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about this simulation lab. And I know that, right, so this was for the MLT program and it had to do with, you know, satisfying the clinical portion. I definitely let you tell it better. But let's go ahead and talk about that, you know, starting with why was it being established and then how does it work? And we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. So this simulation lab is just for our MLT students. Like I mentioned before, our program is accredited by NACLS. And so that means that our students have a lot of flexibility where they can do their internships because the school holds that accreditation. So we were sending them to a lot of small hospitals around the UP. The need for the sim lab was actually identified before I joined Northern. Our previous program director, Dr. Paul Mann, identified that many hospitals in our region were consolidating into sort of corporate structures. And with that consolidation, the laboratory testing also started to become consolidated, particularly in the areas of microbiology and blood bank. So instead of having all of the little tiny hospitals do their own testing menu, it would get sort of more centralized, which is a problem for us because we need to provide a certain amount of experiences for students. And you want that experience at the practicum sites or the internship sites to be as equivalent as possible. So he anticipated that those testing menus were going to become limited and limit our placement for students. So basically to supplement the clinical experience, we added the sim lab. It focuses mainly on microbiology at the simulation lab, but we do some complex immunohematology or blood bank testing as well. And that's basically, he got a program director's grant from the ASCP and to start the lab. And that's basically where I picked up the project. So I developed the curriculum and piloted and implemented the sim lab. I can tell you about the format. Is that something? Okay. So the format of the lab, it's a 4-week. So they do this on top of their clinical placement site. So we kind of tell them, you know, if your site has microbiology testing or blood bank testing, definitely do some there. But we check off all of the microbiology objectives on site at our student lab. So it's a 4-week course. It's a hybrid format. The first 2 weeks are online, fully online. The students can anticipate about 3 to 6 hours of work per day online. So it's a big, it's a lot of stuff. We're really trying to simulate what it feels like to be at the hospital. And then the second 2 weeks is full in-person, you know, 9 to 5 normal. We treat it like as much as possible, like a normal working day. So in the online portion, they have instructional activities. I separate it out based on culture type. So every day is a different culture type. You'll do urines and then spinal fluids. There are lecture videos and then also sort of point of view videos where I'm actually have filmed myself doing some of the testing techniques that you do in a micro lab and blood bank. And then there's also case studies, and we use a commercial source to provide those case studies. And then in the in-person, we're basically trying to make it mimic a real work environment as much as possible. So again, it's 2 weeks, it's 8 hours per day. The first couple of days of the sim lab is dedicated to blood bank. So it's basically kind of like a big wet workshop. We do antibody IDs, we do elutions, we have a simulated massive transfusion protocol activity. And then the last couple of days of the first week, we spend basically preparing for the final week of the sim lab, which is basically our university student lab becomes a clinical micro lab as much as possible. So in that final week, they're doing QC, they're doing maintenance on our instruments, they do all the specimen processing, they're reading out cultures, they're setting up biochemical testing. We do have an automated instrument that they can do testing on. They handle phone calls. I embed problem specimens. I embed stat specimens, really to try to mimic that workflow as much as possible. And, you know, while they're learning the basics of culture readout, also try to put in those interruptions that we experience, you know, because I think that's the only way to really make it feel real is to sort of, okay, so you're getting the basics now, but now try to do this while someone is calling you asking for, you know, whatever specimen that they're missing. And so we try to embed some of those experiences in as well.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned, you know, interruptions, and that's definitely a very constant part of our lab. And even in when you think of maybe on microbiology, where, you know, if you think of maybe hematology or chemistry, that you have all these critical, you know, labs that you have all this, you know, clinical hemoglobin, you know, your platelets and chemistry, you know, you get your potassium, glucose. And so there's definitely a lot of phone calls back and forth. But even in micro, we have doctors asking for the susceptibilities. Why is my culture? Where are my results and this and that? And then you add to the mix that other techs may be asking you for help, or, hey, you know, the Vitech is not working, or it's alarming. What do we do? And then you have to get on the phone and call. And so they can be sometimes very challenging, and definitely as maybe you go up in your career, I think your invisibility fades and you get more visible. So this interruptions definitely increase. So it's good to have that practice component. And and I'll continue asking more about that. But when, so then with this one, they satisfy this, and then they get, you know, they're able to graduate and sit for their examination.
Yes. So this is on top of the actual placement site, that they do go on site, and they do a blood bank rotation on site. But this is just to sort of supplement that, because a lot of our sites are not doing full antibody ID workup and those kinds of things. So yeah, they once I basically just treat it like exactly like they would. I sign them off on the checklist of learning objectives and psychomotor and all of those things that I would if I were, you know, the bench scientist that's working with them through that department. And we treat it like that. So yeah, they just complete this. And then they're along with their practicum, if that was all satisfactory and they pass their exit exam, then they're good to graduate. And then they're eligible to sit their board exam.
Perfect. And then when you talk about the, yeah, like the supplementing, and, you know, that's one thing that as someone that has completed, you know, an MLS program, so I've been through clinicals. And I guess, you know, in my way, I felt like fortunate that I went through like a huge lab, so I got to see so much. But at the same time, I have worked in other labs where maybe there's not that much micro, and you see students, you know, it makes you wonder, okay, well, we can try and how much exposure they're getting. But sometimes, and when you get to maybe a smaller lab, you know, you have the staffing thing. So sometimes students might end up maybe doing a little more work than the whole sitting down and going through the concepts and showing plates, you know, calmly and saying this is this and this is that. So I'm definitely happy that something like this exists where they can, you know, supplement and come out with a better understanding and more, you know, clinical practice. So this is great.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it's helpful as they, you know, enter the workforce, that it's noticeable that they've had some chances. And there's just some things that it's never going to hurt to have more practice on, right? When you're working in the blood bank, having a couple extra antibody IDs under your belt is never going to be a bad thing. So yeah, I'm hopeful that this helps students feel more prepared, not only with like the theory and reading out culture readout plates, but also that we've incorporated enough stress in that they start to feel more confident in both triaging workflow and handling sort of those uncomfortable feelings that can arise when you're feeling a little stressed, a little pressed. Yeah, I'm hopeful that that is part of it as well.
Yeah, definitely love it. And you know, you talked about the phone calls, and I know there's like a critical lab phone component, and also something that I was reading from the materials that you sent me, that right there was like a survey done or something, and most of the students, their main form of communication is through text, right? So this is something that maybe these phone calls might not be that exposed to. So can you talk more about this critical lab phone component and the texting thing?
Sure. Yeah. And I'm sure you've noticed this as well, but I, as a new tech, and then when I started to train, you know, new hires and started working with students, there's a lot of aversion to making that phone call, calling that critical, or even picking up the phone and trying to troubleshoot with someone off the top of your head. That does cause students some stress. And I noticed that sort of anecdotally. And then I surveyed my students, and I think the reason is the students that I surveyed, 80% of them prefer texting. And in the hospital, we just don't text, right? We're still using the phone call to communicate with different members of the healthcare team. And that's a really critical skill to develop, because especially in the areas of micro and blood bank, you're often know a lot more specific types of information than the people that you're trying to communicate to. And so you really have to develop that skill, and students are apprehensive about that. So one of the things that we do, well, I've found that students are apprehensive about that, but one of the things that we do is we call into the lab. So I have my colleagues, I give them scripts. And so not only are they calling in, the students have to handle an incoming call that they don't know what's, you know, they don't know the problem. I also embed problem specimens into their workflow. So a specimen will come down without a source, or they'll get a phone call from a doctor asking for culture results that shouldn't be ready yet, and they'll have to sort of figure out and make those wheels turn. Or they'll get a critical result or something like that that they'll have to call. So they're all structured, and I have scripts for the faculty that help with this role play activity. And then with the students, to sort of measure the effectiveness of these activities, I did a pre and a post survey. So basically looking at their comfort with their ability to communicate microbiology information on the phone before and after these activities. Before I throw them into the faculty, I also let them role play with each other. And it's funny, they're even a little bit apprehensive about doing that. I don't know if it's because they feel silly about it, but overall, they generally, based on the data that we collected, really do feel more comfortable using the phone after the sim lab. So I know that they'll get more practice at this at their clinical sites, but I do want it to be part of what we do in the lab as well, because it's such a critical skill to develop.
It definitely is, and yes, you know, as I said, you know, we have to communicate that information, and not only that, we have to handle different personalities on the other side of the phone. You know, a lot of people, they tend to be professional, and they, but you will get those phone calls also where they're dissatisfied, or there are many components, especially if you think about a large facility, transport time of the sample, and they're like, where are my cultures? Like, well, you know, I was set up, I don't know, earlier, like last night. Why last night? And then you have to explain those things. And there's, so you do, even though the lab, you know, attracts some introverts because they think, okay, I'm not dealing with actual patients, you know, I'm dealing with samples, and maybe micro, the samples are not ready right away with the cultures and things like that. But you do have, you know, a lot of customer relation where you have to call doctors, like I mentioned before. So it's definitely a very important component. So I like that. Yes. Okay, so I also saw that there's a simulated biochemical portion. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure, yeah. You have to get creative when you're doing stuff like this. They need to know a lot of biochemical tests, and not only can those be expensive, they can also be difficult to source, honestly. Some of them are difficult to order. So with some of the biochemical tests, we do have some that we order, but with a lot of the tube tests, I actually have made, they're like laminated sheets of paper with the positive and the negative reaction on them, like a picture, an actual physical picture. And instead of inoculating a citrate tube, you have a laminated picture of a citrate tube. The students will take the isolate that they're working up. They'll write, there's room to write on these sheets. So they'll write all of the patient demographics, you know, just like when you're setting up a biochem on a real person, you would label it with all the patient demographics. And then the other thing that they have to do is they have to tell me how they want it incubated and for how long and where, you know, that's part of it too, just so that they understand where would this go. And then if they've done all that correctly, when I review that, I will give them a simulated result. So basically just circle the one that it would look like. It would look citrate positive or citrate negative. If they don't complete all that information, right? So if they forget to label it with the patient, it goes in the, it's garbage, right? You need to reset that up. If they forget to tell me where or how to incubate it, it didn't get incubated. And so they have to reset that up, and you're delaying patient care and all of those things that come along with having to reset up tests on patients. So it's very, you know, the cost of lamination and printing and color, right? But it is, can be, make it more accessible, especially for us, the cohorts of students that come through. We've had really small classes, we've had really large classes. And so little tricks like this can help you sort of absorb some of those costs that are come when, you know, ordering, you know, 15 different biochemical tests for 20 students is different than ordering it for 5 students. And so that all comes into like the calculation of what you can spend. And little tricks like this can help you sort of really make a realistic, you know, they're still having to look at the tube and make that interpretation. You're just not doing the part where they stab it into the tube.
You know, when we talk about cost, and as someone that, you know, that before I started teaching the lab, I was working in a hospital, and I still do. But I definitely didn't realize that I learned it the hard way. Like, I started teaching lab, and I'm like, okay, let's get this many blood plates and I have this. And then all of a sudden they tell me, no, we cannot order this much. It's just like, maybe, you know, one per 2 students, you know, share a stack of plates or this and this and that. And it's not like the hospital where the budget is larger and you pretty much order what you need. So definitely I learned that. And one of the things that you mentioned with, like, if they don't label things or, you know, thinking about things like reset, and that's something very real in microbiology, then those steps, you know, they will cost a lot of time. And we kind of have to think like a day ahead, because the bug needs, you know, time to grow. And if you don't sub it, then, you know, that's one day and things like that. If something's not labeled and you have to reset it, that's another day. And then one day to grow and things like that. So it's everything, you know, it's really about time. So, okay. So, also, I know that you mentioned that this, you know, the need, this idea came before you started working there, but so maybe as far as you know, was this, you know, something that was difficult to implement? And then if maybe another program is thinking of doing this, is there any advice, like maybe as far as resources?
Yeah, I mean, so the proposal, all of the work, groundwork that goes into creating a new course at your institution, you know, there's some work that goes into that. I wasn't involved in that process, but I know that that is a process usually. I think the biggest difficulty in this is the time is the resource, right? So developing the materials, everything from prepping the course, and then also the actual physical time that you're with the students it's a lot. It's a busy couple of weeks. So you're with them for 8 hours, and then you actually have to review all of their work as well. So it becomes kind of a lot. So making sure that you have the time to dedicate to that, and then also the resources. So I do, I have co-taught this, so depending on how big the courses are, and I have a very supportive faculty group that I work with. And so sometimes we co-teach, sometimes I teach it and get a little bit of help. Former students that are in the area will sometimes come help me out with prepping and those kinds of things. But yeah, if any of your listeners ever wanted to chat about how we got this off the ground running in more detail, I'm really open and happy to have those discussions. But I do think the most difficult resource is the amount of time it takes to sort of like turn the wheels and develop the curriculum for this kind of, and just the stuff, you know, the work cards and all of those things. If you can collaborate and sort of not totally start from scratch, and work with other people that have developed sim labs, I think that's a good thing to explore before sort of trying to develop all of the materials that you need from scratch.
Okay. And as far as, is there any, do you have any like any feedback as far as, you know, how is this doing? Maybe this is like reflected on the scores from when the students take their, you know, their certification exam, or maybe like, I don't know, some of the sites giving feedback or student feedback, you know, itself. So is there any feedback about this?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, students really, they like the lab. I don't know if they love, you know, moving all of the rigmarole around the lab, but they generally, the feedback about the lab itself is a good experience, and that they're happy to have done that, and that it did supplement their practicum experience. So you mentioned exam scores. A really neat thing about the BOC exam, which is the entry exam that they have to take, most students have to take before they enter the profession, is it's separated by section. And so we can take a look at the actual microbiology scores separately from the rest of the exam, which is something that I am planning to do. Our cohorts have been pretty small. They've recently gotten bigger. And then after this summer, when this group of students has taken the exam, I would like to look at the microbiology scores from the last 4 years and then compare them to the previous 4 years to see if there's any differences there. But in terms of how it's going, we are certainly maintaining our pass rate bench scores for our accreditor. There's been no changes there, but I think it would be really interesting to dig in a little bit more specifically into the microbiology scores themselves.
Perfect. And as far as this, you know, are there any future goals when it comes to this or anything else?
Yeah. So I recently, this last semester, worked with a couple of students from the computer science department at Northern, and they developed a simulated lab information system. So they basically like digitized the work card and made it so that I can pull up the work card. And then it's also supposed to be compatible with scanners. So I'm going to get a barcode printer in it because I, you know, we do all of our work on paper. All of our work cards are paper. And that's just really doesn't reflect how it actually feels to work in micro in 2025, right? And so hopefully this system will have the capacity for them to actually scan in their culture plates, bring up the patient, and then enter digitally into the work card. And then also I will have the ability to review their work. So it's a fairly simple, it's definitely not as complicated as a normal LIS, but I think it will give them the sort of like more of the feeling of what it's actually feels like to work in a micro lab. So I'm excited to see if we can implement that for this summer. That would be really cool. And then I'm always looking for ways to try to make the plates look more realistic, right? Because when you're reading out cultures on the bench, you know, not super often do you just have a pure culture growing, right? There's a lot of normal flora and confusing things and contaminants and all kinds of stuff. So I have found it challenging to represent that on the plates. Usually when I try to incorporate some sort of normal microbiota, it either takes over and it just gets too confusing. And so if anyone out there has like good recipes on how to make, you know, a urine culture look like it has a little bit of normal flora in it, I'm all ears for that. But yeah, those are the two things that I'm working on right now, mainly trying to implement that LIS so they can sit at their workstation and scan plates in and enter data electronically.
Yeah, and that's definitely a big part of the lab and, you know, the information system and that can be depending on the, even an information, because, you know, you can come in from a program knowing your stuff or whatever, and then but then however the system is, if it's difficult, it can take a time for you to get used to how it works and things like that. Okay, if you think especially with micro, all these components, okay, ordering this plate or adding this biochemical and looking at the susceptibility and things like that, so there's many components that'll be good, you know, you're coming out, you know, looking at the LIS and getting comfortable with it, that's pretty good. Okay, well, as you know, as the episode comes to a close, is there anything else that you want to add?
Yeah, I guess if you are a microbiology instructor or you're running a sim lab or you are a clinical microbiologist and you have any ideas to make a good simulation lab or make my sim lab better, I would love feedback. And also if you're someone that's just trying to start a sim lab, I'm super happy to chat with anyone about my sort of successes and pitfalls that I've experienced through this process. Yeah, the sharing of this knowledge, I'd really like to add to this body of research. I think there's a lot of good, I mean, there is good literature about the sim labs, but when you think about nursing and other allied health professions, there's a really big body of literature that they can tap into. And I really want to contribute to that in the medical field, because I think we're going to be encountering issues with placement sites. I think that's going to kind of an issue that's going to be here to stay. So yeah, if anyone ever wants to sort of chat about simulation or those kinds of things, super happy to do that.
Perfect. And is there like an email address where they can contact you if they want to talk to you?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm at, again, at Northern Michigan University. My email address is emathys, E-M-A-T-T-H-Y-S, at nmu.edu. And yeah, feel free to reach out. Happy to chat.
Perfect. So yeah, there you have it. So if you have some questions or you want to, is it something that you're interested in, or definitely, please, you know, feel free to reach out. And if you also want to do it through this podcast and then at the same time, you know, maybe email me, I'm definitely happy also to receive information and forward it to Emily. So I like what you mentioned about clinical placement, and because that's definitely it's an issue and a true reality. And as we work right towards expand the knowledge of our profession, right, and we want people to know, hey, this is here, and maybe we want to increase the students in our programs, and that's definitely something that we have to deal with. Because, like, for example, in my institution, you know, we get a lot, and still, you know, that can be challenging because you have to balance the students with the workload, because you have to work and teach.
Right. And like you mentioned earlier, even supplementing their clinical experience could be a really useful tool that maybe some programs are underutilizing.
Yes. And yeah, I definitely remember I was working in a micro lab. This is summer of 2020. So people can guess, you know, what we were doing a lot of. And we're receiving students, so that was definitely very challenging with COVID tests, and then, oh yeah, let me show you these cultures and asking questions, and it was definitely very challenging.
It is a lot.
Well, you know, Emily, you know, thank you so much, and you know, this has been great. You know, when I saw your poster, I found it very interesting. Definitely a plus that you said that you listened to the podcast, so that's also it's also great when you chat with someone and they listen. So thank you for listening.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. You know, definitely thank you for taking the time to be in Let's Talk Micro. And you know, if you ever have any updates or you want to talk MLS or anything, just, you know, please feel free to come back.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And that, my dear audience, is the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed learning about the simulation lab. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. Hey, you know, maybe this is something that you might be thinking of, or maybe this is a need of your particular program. So hopefully, maybe this is useful or it inspires you to do something. So definitely great information. As always, stay tuned. Great things coming your way. And thank you so much for the support. So please, continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking micro. Until the next time. Bye.